Okay, today is Friday, July 27th. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. I'm here interviewing Ron Schuler. We're here at Steenbach Memorial Library. Ron, to start off, to get the sound quality correct, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Okay, it's Ron Schuler, S-C-H-U-L-E-R.
Okay. And then one other thing, could I get your year of birth? Doesn't have to be day or month, just
okay,
year.
1940.
Okay. All right. Ron, we're going to talk to you, I think, primarily today about your time on campus as an undergrad and maybe a grad student. But
right.
I think it's always important to get a little bit of context of a person's life. So I know from when we met previously that you grew up in Valders, Wisconsin. I know where that is now, but I wonder if you wouldn't mind starting off for the tape talking about Valders and maybe a bit about where you actually grew up within Valders.
Okay. Valders, small town in Manitowoc County. It's midway between Lake Winnebago and Lake Michigan. It's right on Highway 151. So if you leave Madison and go on 151, it'll go right past where my parents used to live, and some of our farmland is right there. I grew up on a dairy farm, and we also had pigs as well, but my dad went out of pigs when some of his labor left home, myself and my brother included in that. But it was, we had 50 cows at the time, which was a good-sized dairy farm. And we milked the cows, and one of the things we did not have is, in modern convenience, was a barn cleaner. We had three barn cleaners, three of us with shovels. So consequently, it was pretty labor-intensive at that time. And then shortly after that, he converted to a different milking powder system, which didn't require that handling. So, but it was, like I say, dairy farm. My father graduated from grade school and was pretty innovative in terms of the farm and always keeping up to date on equipment, which allowed me to become familiar with some of the latest equipment and methods that were used. And our farm was just right on the edge of town, and over the years, land was sold for different purposes. It was athletic field, grade school, water treatment facility, and my dad built homes after he retired from the farm with my cousin. So consequently, he could, he was a pretty able person.
So did your parents remain then in that area for their entire life?
Yes, they did. My parents moved off the farm, and my brother took over the farm in actually in 1975, and they moved, filled a house in town on some land they owned, where they put in a street 30 years earlier, and this is the last lot to be built on, out of about 20 lots. So that was not a real enterprising situation, but they did have, build a home. It was right along Highway 151.
Okay. And your mother, was she a stay-at-home mom?
Yes. You could say that not in a traditional sense. She was out in the barn a lot. She was the one that was first up in the morning to get the milking started, feeding the cows, and before the rest of us got up, actually. Not that much before, but certainly she was always out there when she was on the farm, always helping with the milking.
Okay. And, you know, we don't know who's going to listen to this in the future. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the intensity or the labor intensity of dairy farming. It might have been a little different when you were doing it growing up than it is today.
Oh, yes, it was. Some farmers were getting barn cleaners, which is a conveyor that in the gutter that takes the manure out. We had to shovel it out, and some people used wheelbarrows. We had a manure bucket, we called it. And then on our pigs, we had 50 brood sows, meaning they were having litters of pigs twice a year. And that their pens had to be cleaned up by hand and thrown out the window, actually, in the barn. So it was kind of, but it was pretty labor intensive that way. And we were, like I say, my dad was pretty progressive, but back then he had a lot of low-cost labor because there were three brothers there. And consequently, when I went to college, I went in 58, my younger brother 60, 1960. So my older brother stayed there, obviously, and helped on the farm. And my mother was pretty involved, spending a lot of hours milking cows in the morning, evening, feeding the cows. So she was pretty heavily involved.
And taking care of dairy cows, you have to milk them twice a day, right?
Yeah, right. We were milking twice a day. There are some farmers today who milk three times a day, but we were always two times a day. And usually we started at 4:30, 5 o'clock. We were out in the barn starting to milk the cows. So that was...
Did that mean that your family didn't get to take a lot of trips or vacations? Were you tied to the dairy farm that way?
Pretty much tied to it. There were a couple occasions my parents took off. And I remember that some of my older cousins would come over and help out. And then as we got in high school, it wasn't that frequently that they did go on some trips, but they did go on a few trips. So they were able to get away, but we pretty much stayed around home. I still remember in high school, it was a big treat when I was junior in high school. I got to go to Chicago, the first time out of state. So,
why did you end up going to Chicago?
Actually, I was involved in a project. We grew an unusual crop of sugar beets, and I had a sugar beet project, and I won. Got to go on the trip as a result of the project. But sugar beets aren't growing up there anymore.
So growing up and starting in school, would you consider yourself to be academically inclined in school, or maybe more socially inclined in school?
I would say it was more academically inclined, although I wasn't the top student in my class. I was, I think, 9th or 10th out of 78, so I wasn't top, but I enjoyed math, and I was, of course, had a background in agriculture, and our high school ag teacher always said, don't forget your ag background is something for the future, so I combined the math and science type classes, my strengths there, with agriculture, and ended up in agricultural engineering, which I didn't even know was a program that existed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, you end up, and we'll get there, but we'll mention it right now, you end up with actually two degrees, but one, a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, one in agriculture, your bachelor's degrees. But you just said that wasn't necessarily what you were thinking in terms of...
Right, yeah. And back then when we went in ag engineering, they didn't have a BS in ag engineering, but what they had in the ag engineering department was a five-year program, in which after 4 years you got a BS in agriculture, and then the next year you got your mechanical engineering, or civil if you want to be that, into civil engineering, but it basically took another year, but it was a 5-year program that was geared so that you took courses all the way along, like mechanical or like civil engineers.
Okay. Do you recall at what point growing up and going to school, secondary school, when college was started to enter your mind, or did it while you were in school?
I'm smiling because when I was following my senior year in high school, we had a college day where we went to neighboring town Manitowoc, and I was dating a girl that was going to go, so I had to come up with a reason to go, and I picked out some school, and I picked out Milwaukee School of Engineering, and so that got me interested, and then I had a visit with her. At that time, was our high school guidance counselor, who was also our principal, and he encouraged me to go on to school, and suggested two schools, at that time it was University of Wisconsin-Platteville or Madison, and he would give me a recommendation of Madison if I wanted to go there. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the tipping point that I had somebody who was willing to write a letter of support for me to go to Madison.
Now at that point, were Madison, you probably only know this sort of retrospectively, but at that point were Madison and Platteville sort of the two ag campuses?
River Falls had something.
Falls had something too.
Right. But a lot of people from my high school ag teacher was a Platteville graduate, and there were several other, a couple of my classmates also went to Platteville.
Okay. So you said you chose Madison. Was it a tough decision between Madison and Platteville, or?
No, not really. I just thought that, and I talked to some other students, people that were students down here, and so I kind of knew a little bit what was going on. And there was another somebody graduated about 4 years ahead of me from high school, was in ag engineering down here, lived only about 2 or 3 miles away, and I visited with him, and that kind of maybe. And then I came down to visit, if you recall or know, in the fall there's always a lot of FFA students on campus, and I got to come down for that in a food processing judging contest, and I stopped by the department, and there were some labs there, doors were open, I walked in and kind of looked around a little bit, and that kind of keep my interest as well.
So you were involved in FFA, which is Future Farmers of America. You were involved in that in high school?
Right.
Okay.
Not extremely involved, but I took all the ag classes and was a member of our high school club.
Okay. So once you decided on coming to Madison, financially, how did you plan on, or did you have a sort of a financial plan to help go to school here?
It's called Ma and Pa. Pretty much they took care of it, but I was expected to do quite a bit at home too, so I was kind of expected to come home frequently. The first year I was home every other week or so, then spend the summers at home. And growing up, we really never got compensated hour by hour or whatever. Mm-hmm. We just, if we needed some money, my parents would give it to me, in other words, for going to movies or to mm-hmm. other events. It was never, we never had a wages per se, so there was always money in the checking account when I needed it. And, mm-hmm. I was pretty frugal too when I was in college, so it wasn't.
So coming to, I know you've been here before and you've been to Chicago before, but what was the adjustment coming to live in Madison as opposed to, you know, living in a smaller town, so coming from Valdhurst and living in Madison? Was there do you recall an adjustment for you?
I was good. I had a room all by myself, and I got to meet some friends. I was in a house, which no longer exists, but anyway, and there were some students across the hall from me that I got to know, and then this high school friend that was 4 years ahead of me belonged to a fraternity, and then I got involved in a fraternity, and it was an ag fraternity, so it was a lot of the students in that fraternity were kids that grew up on farms, so we kind of had a connection with each other, and I had actually known one or two beforehand, but it was an opportunity to be in a house where there was like 30 of us, and we're all, pretty much everyone, except maybe one or two, that didn't grow up on a farm, and most of us grew up in dairy farms, so we had all kind of similar backgrounds.
Okay. And just to confirm, so you moved into, you had your own room in a house. Is that different than after you found out about the fraternity? Did you live in two different houses, or was it the same?
I just stayed in that single room, that room by myself for that first year.
Okay.
Because I had kind of a commitment there. But I did visit the fraternity and usually went up there once a week.
Okay, so then you moved, after your first year, you moved in the fraternity
right.
house.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of that fraternity, or what is the name of that fraternity?
It's Alpha Gamma Rho.
Okay.
AGR.
And is the fraternity house still standing on campus?
We're in a different one. It's now been not on Langdon Street.
Okay.
And I've been involved there too, by the way, on the foundation. I was president of the foundation there for a while.
Okay.
When we had a remodeling, we just remodeled a couple of, 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
Something over $1 million of remodeling.
Wow. Okay. Just making sure I get that written down. So, but neither of the houses that you were in as an undergrad are extant. Are they both?
The one is gone. The first one was freshman year, but my the fraternity house that I lived in, the house is still there. It's now a co-op.
Oh, okay.
It's in a residential area on the west end of campus, basically in a residential.
Okay.
University Heights is called, I think.
Oh, okay.
But the chancellor is just around the corner from us.
So you had
the
to be,
president.
So you had to be on your best behavior?
Well, somewhat, yeah. It's on the highest hill in Madison, top of it. That's what's unique about it. It had a big wall in front, and the house was above the wall. So that was kind of unique.
Hmm. Wow.
So.
And All right, so we've already sort of got you here to Madison. You graduated, did you graduate in 58? Is that what you said? Graduated high school in 58?
58, yes. And then came to Madison, spent 5 years as an undergraduate.
Yeah. Okay. And you knew going in that was a five-year program that you were going to be involved
yes,
in?
Yes, they had a whole five-year list of courses year by year by year, semester by semester, actually.
So was there any flexibility within that to take other stuff, or was it you were locked in from the moment?
It was pretty, very few electives. I did take some extra courses because I was an ROTC, Reserve Officers Training Corps.
Okay.
And they required a couple extra courses that I took.
Okay. And let's talk about ROTC for a second, because let's talk about ROTC for a second. What was your commitment coming to Madison? What was your ROTC commitment?
When I came here, the first 2 years, it was required of all males to take ROTC, either one of the Army, Navy, or Air Force. And yeah, take the first 2 years, it was non-credit. It usually required one or two class hours a week plus an hour of drill and ceremonies, marching.
Okay.
And then after the 2 years, I volunteered to go in the Advanced Corps, what it's called, and stayed in for another 2 years, and after that you get a commission as an officer.
So that was called the Advanced Corps?
Yeah.
Within the ROTC?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And then we got paid. That's what we didn't get paid in the first 2 years. Then we got paid, ready for this, 90 cents a day.
Ooh.
$27 a month.
Paid $27 a month. But in $1950 as a student, $27 a month probably.
It was quite helpful. I mean, you got a few meals out of it. So.
Sure.
I was in Advanced Corps from 60 to 61, so 62.
Okay. So did you volunteer because of the money? Did you volunteer because ROTC sort of fit you? Why did you decide to continue on?
I guess it kind of fit me. I think I was interested in the military, and when we got through, if you're in Advanced Corps, you always had a commitment afterwards, and no matter which branch you're in, and mine was a 2-year commitment.
Okay. So let's talk about some of these. Let's start with some of these classes that you had to take. So it sounds like you had a pretty structured 5 years here. What classes jump out at you when I ask, about these classes as an undergraduate? What class or classes jump out at you as memorable?
Probably the most likely ones would be in the ag engineering area, where we had a course on machinery, ag machinery, on farm tractors, farm buildings, farm electrification. Those are some that were kind of applied to my field, kind of hands-on in the area. So, like all engineers, we had to take 4 semesters of math, and then of course, engineering sciences that required in mechanical engineering, and some of the same ones that required civil engineering too. So across the engineering fields.
Okay. Now, were most of those classes held in the same building that you currently work in, or was it?
The ag engineering classes were. The labs were in the same building. Some of the labs are just upstairs from my office.
Okay.
But all the labs have now been moved out. They're in a separate building. In fact, when I came here, my office that I have now was a machine shop.
Right. You had mentioned that when we first chatted, that you currently were in a machine, or where you were recently or previously was a machine shop. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What about some of the professors that stand out in your mind of your undergraduate time?
Okay. Yeah. Again, the most memorable ones are the ones that were in the agricultural engineering department, because when I came back to graduate school, they were still there yet, so I got to know them better. But I still see my undergraduate advisor. In fact, I just saw him Tuesday of this week. My graduate advisor's passed away, but pretty much most of the other ones are gone. But there's still a couple in the area that I don't see very often. But those are the ones that stand out probably more.
What's the name of the undergraduate advisor that's still?
Marshall Finner.
Finner, F-I-N-N-E-R?
Yes.
And did he teach you as well as being an advisor? Or was he?
Yeah, I had one course from him.
Just one course?
Actually, he taught, had a lab and an ag machinery course. Another one that comes to mind is a professor that his name is Professor Duffy.
Okay.
And Duffy is well known over the years. He was recognized as developing some machinery, forage harvester, for example, and quite a character, you might say, in the classroom. You can't do it nowadays, but he would smoke a cigar. You knew he was around, and he was told not to smoke anymore, but he chewed it on. Chewed the cigar anyway. So he was really kind of an earthy guy.
He wasn't smoking it.
No. He had a spittoon in his office, which was gone lost now. Somebody had it a couple of years ago, and I can't find it.
Oh, well, that's too bad. So do you think that your father's interest in trying to keep up with technology, do you think that led to your interest in the machinery part of agriculture?
Right, I think so. We always, in the neighborhood, got some of the first new machines that came out, and I got to operate them at quite a young age as well. In upper grade school, I was operating some machines that pulled a harvester and a wagon behind it. Mm-hmm. So it was. And it was a tractor that had a crank to get started. It didn't have a starter.
So you were operating machinery before you would have been licensed to drive an automobile.
Oh, yes. Back then, on farms, you could get a permit at age 14 to drive on the road with a vehicle, car, or truck.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be for farm purposes.
So you were able to, you took advantage of that? And
right. Well, we had... we had a reason for doing it because we had animals at two different locations, two different farms about a mile apart, so couldn't afford to be walking or driving a tractor. That worked primarily because my mother never drove. Then my older brother got it and I got it. My younger brother couldn't get it because there were too many drivers in the family.
Did your mom just not have a license, or did she just not?
She was not interested. She drove nothing. She didn't drive a tractor or a car.
And again, I'm backing up here, but since we're talking about growing up, did your mother and father, I guess I'll ask it this way, sort of see the value in college? I mean, were they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my older brother could have gone on to college, he could have gone to farm short course here. But he chose not to, and my dad, I still remember dad saying, go try it. If you don't make it, that's okay. So he wasn't really pushing. I was obviously first one to go. He was a younger brother, too, that who ended up coming to school here, too, probably because of me.
Was he close enough to your age that you were both here at the same time?
Yes, he was 2 years younger.
Okay.
We lived in the same fraternity house.
Oh, okay.
But we didn't live in the same room. We weren't roommates.
As the older of those two siblings, how would you characterize the relationship in college here that you had with your brother?
It was sort of close. We didn't, we didn't go out. We ate together, but we never sat together. We didn't spend a lot of time together. We were had other our other roommates, our own roommates that we spent more time with, and. We got along. We got along fine. It was not. That was not an issue. And he did get a degree in ag economics here. So and did very well for himself. He was president of a bank.
So who were some of your good friends or cohorts in the program? Who were some of the people that were getting their degree the same time you did that stand out in your mind?
Just trying to think. I associate with the guys in the house more so, but there were some ag engineers in the house. And some with a fraternity, we still stay in contact. There's one trying to brother Alan Kepke, who we were, he was an ag engineering too, and he's farming over at Oconomowoc. But we have a close connection with him. We introduced to his wife.
Okay.
So my wife and I introduced them. After, okay. This is after we, after I came back from military service. I was in grad school. We were still stayed connected, and we, and they had three children. And were pretty close. And my wife was maid of honor in the wedding.
Okay.
There's some other ones. Some other were in the house or ag engineer. One. His name is Bill Waterstreet. He worked. He didn't work in the field. He worked for Boeing for a number of years, and then worked for a farm machinery company later. But like I say, Al Kepke went farming, and they're a very successful farm. Three brothers farming together, and always getting some recognition for their accomplishments.
And what sort of or if any. I guess I would call them sort of extracurricular activities, like, you know, did you go see football games or things like that? What sort of things did you do?
I, as an undergraduate student, I went to nearly all the games that I could, home games, that is. So I participated in intramural sports. Our fraternity house had a team, a football team, basketball. So then I participated in the our professional society, which was the called ASAE, American Society of Agricultural Engineers. I was a member of that organization all my years as an undergraduate.
Okay.
And I'm still a member of the professional organization today.
Okay. Where were some of the places, either on campus or off campus, that you would go to either get a meal or something to drink?
You mean that yellow beverage?
Whatever beverage, whatever beverage of choice.
There were some. One of the things, there were more places along University Avenue and your campus for us to eat. My freshman year, I just had a room by myself, and we usually went to the Memorial Union to eat. Memorial Union was, and there was a cafeteria there. And then there was on University Avenue, the street I was on was Johnson Street, which is one block off of University Avenue. There were several restaurants and well-recognized for food as well as later activities, one called a Hasty Tasty or HT. Another one was called the Badger Tavern, BT. And then down on State Street, there's some KK College Club.
And is it in the same place that it is currently?
No, it's the College Club used to be where Memorial Library is on State Street. Now
okay.
It moved quite some time ago already, probably 30, 40 years ago.
And did everybody, or at least your friends, did they call them by these acronyms? Because you said, you know, HT, BT, KK. Is that how you would...
Right.
How you would say where you were going.
Right, yeah, we're going to HT.
Okay. So as you were preparing to, well, actually, I guess in a sense, you graduated twice. You got your first BS in January of 63 and then the second in October. Was there one ceremony that you were involved in, or did you choose to be involved in the graduation ceremonies?
I went to the January one, but I was nobody else, man, I just went by myself. And then although I finished in October, I had to take a correspondence course to finish off, but I went to an official graduation in June of 63. My parents came down for that.
Okay. And in this case, I guess I won't compare it to students today or back then, but in your specific case, you knew what you were doing after you graduated, right? I mean, you had this 2-year commitment to the
right.
military.
Right. But I wasn't sure after the military what I was going to do because I wasn't certain. I was talking to one of the things, being in the military for 2 years, I wasn't using a lot of my engineering technology, although it was fairly sophisticated where I was working, but it wasn't using some of the rudimentary things. But as I was approaching getting out of service, I did a visit with Professor Bruin, who was in the department here on campus, and he ended up being my major professor as a graduate student on both master's degree and PhD. And I also looked at Michigan State, and Michigan State was not really encouraging me, because I wasn't a stellar student as an undergrad.
Okay.
So, but Professor Bruin supported me. He was also our as an undergrad, he was our advisor to our fraternity house, so I got to know him there, as well as I had a farm tractors course from him, so I got to know him. And as an undergraduate, I worked for the department grading papers, and I graded papers for him.
Okay.
So that's how I also got, which I might just bring up an anecdotal thing. I was visiting with somebody the other day, in March, at a farm show, and the guy I was visiting with him, we talked about Duffy, and he said he had Duffy in his class. He said, well, he said, I was a student in your class too. I said, you were? I said, how old are you? He said, 70. You were? And it turned out I helped out teaching the lab, and when one of the professors had to be gone, Professor Finner actually, had to be gone, so I helped out in the lab. And so here's somebody who was only a year younger or 2 years younger than I am, and it really indicates my age.
Or maybe just your aptitude. You were so good at what you did. I guess to get back to aptitude, though, you said you weren't a stellar undergraduate student. Upon reflection, why do you think that was?
I guess I was... some of the courses I was taking, I was running out of energy. I took math in high school, and 4 semesters in college, I was kind of running out of steam in terms of interest in it, and I probably didn't study as much as I could have because of some of the extracurricular activities and other things I was doing in terms of, not that it would consume a lot of time. We had parties at the house, I guess I wasn't probably motivated as much as when I came back to graduate school.
Okay. So, I mean, in a sense, you were sort of enjoying some of the sort of the full range of the college experience.
Right,
so not just academic, but social.
Right, yeah.
And also the professional stuff that you were
involved in, too. Right, yeah. So, we didn't do that, too.
If you wouldn't mind giving a brief overview of your 2 years in the Army, I think it's important to make sure we get that on the record.
I see.
Okay. So it looks like you started in, at least on your resume, you have that you started in September 63.
Right. I started out in, I don't know what this much detail, but Fort Bliss, Texas, for some training for air defense artillery. Air defense artillery deals with missiles. That was part of North American Air Defense Command to defend the United States from air attacks out from outside. And I happened to be in Texas at the time President Kennedy was killed.
Okay.
But I was on the other end of the state. But nonetheless, it did impact us. And then I was on active duty in Battle Creek, Michigan for the rest of the time, except for 5 weeks. I went to school in Mississippi for more training. But basically, I was at a headquarters in Battle Creek, and as far as units under us, we were part of the NORAD, which is Air Force, and then the Army, and we were the connection to the Army, but we were defending to the north of the United States, expecting an attack. This was a Cold War era, and so we could defend to the north, and the Air Force had planes that went out, and they were the first means of defense, although the Air Force had missiles, too, that we could actually launch from our location.
Wow.
And they were out in Buffalo. We were in Battle Creek.
Wow.
And then as far as, that was intermediate. Then the closer in, within 100 miles, then it was the Army's responsibility to take over. And we had missile sites around a large city under our command. Was Detroit, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Buffalo, and Pittsburgh. And We were basically electronically connected with them, and I could see on my screen all the way from Lake Michigan over to the center of New York, and we could see the planes in the air at the time, you know, and we had radars feeding into us. Our building had one floor that was basically dedicated to computers, because our computer processed data from about 15 or 20 different radar sites and put it together so that we could see it as one plane or whatever. And then like I say, the Air Force people talked to their pilots, but we had one plane, F-106s, that our computer could control. The pilot could take his hands off the controls, and our computer would bring it in on a plane coming in. And so you think about GPS, that stuff today, we had something that was pretty sophisticated back then. And then our missile sites at the large cities had several sites, and people wouldn't believe that maybe what we had, that we had nuclear warheads that we had under control. 10 megaton.
So that's, sort of two things jump out at me there. The first thing is, even though you said you weren't using your eggs, you were deeply involved in some cutting edge technology.
Right, yeah.
There in Battle Creek.
Yeah, in terms of using it, not necessarily developing it like an engineer would be. So we had electronic, scopes in front of us that we could see. Large range, of course, we could zoom in too, but we could see, get a history of the planes, and we could actually had I could shine a light on the screen, and I could get more, let's say the plane on my screen, I could point a light at it, and I could get more details on it in terms of altitude, speed, direction, and what it was.
Wow.
And then we had symbols on what kinds of planes they were. There was data for them, and we could tell just looking at it what it was, one of our planes, an airline, or the president coming through. Because when the president came through, our Air Force people watched it very closely for protection of the president. And so that they would watch to see planes that were in the area or some other planes getting close to that Air Force One.
Right.
So
there might be more I want to ask about this. There's one thing I want to ask right now while it's on my mind, but I want to make a note that I may want to come back to this in our follow-up interview, just because I think it's interesting. And the thing I want to ask about, so you were in the military from 63 to 65, and I asked this when we met without the recorder, but I want to ask now about what you knew or did you know anything really about Vietnam during the 2 years that you were in the military?
Very little. It was just starting to build up at that time, or there was some activity taking place over there in this Southeast Asia. And when I got out in 65, a number of my fellow officers, they were somewhere in the Air Force, were going over there. Basically, they were going to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines, but that was really a jumping off place for them to go to Vietnam and be forward observers, which was not a good thing to be doing, because you're out front and directing planes in into where the drop zones were.
Mm-hmm. And so these were your colleagues or cohorts after you went out, after you mustered out, they continued
right.
on and
right. They had a longer commitment. Air Force always had a longer commitment, 4 years or something, I think it was. Depends on what you were in. If you're in the pilot program, I think it was 5 years. Certainly at least three.
Okay.
And some came about the same time I did. Some, people are coming and going all the time there. So,
was there going to be any, or I guess, since I've never been in the military, and particularly not in the '60s, was there any opportunity for you to go anywhere else but Battle Creek, specifically anywhere outside the country, like Germany or someplace like that?
Was commissioned, I was asked where I wanted to go, and back then I had somebody I knew quite well and wanted to be close nearby, so I specified Midwest, but I would probably have had to do it over again. I would have selected Germany, but that here or there, but anyway, I didn't end up with that person.
So, I was going to say, so as with your reason to go to college, there was a woman involved, I'm guessing, right? You said that you went to the college fair because there was a woman involved.
Right.
You stayed close to the Midwest because there was a...
Right, woman involved.
Okay. Yeah. Not there's anything wrong with that. I'm just...
Right, you made
just
a decision.
Just seeing
yeah,
a pattern.
Yeah, so... I think one of the things I should just throw in here, I think I... With added responsibility and so forth, I think I matured a fair bit in the military.
Okay.
Because of being an officer, you have more responsibilities, and I think I did some maturing. You know,
okay.
So consequently, grad school, I did much better.
And I think we can... let me ask this, just because we've been talking about your military time now for 7 or 8 minutes. Is there anything else on your mind about your time in the Army that you'd like to... just in case we don't get back to it. It might be anything you want, or maybe something that particularly pertains to your future development.
Well, one of the things that I would have to say, when I was initially at Battle Creek, I stayed in what's called a Bachelor of Officers Corps, and I stayed there almost a year. Then I had an opportunity to move off. The new officers had to stay there, and all the ones that were there longer could get off. And I had an enjoyable time because we rented a house on a lake, bought a boat, and water ski. Wow. And one of the things, when I was in the military, we had to have an officer enlistment on duty at all times. So consequently, we worked shift work. So we took 3 days nights, 3 days days, and then 3 days off. And so we weren't working the 7-day week like civilians. And so consequently, we had a lot of time off when you're younger. And sometimes when you work at night, you got time on your hands during the day, even though you should sleep.
Yeah, but when you're in your 20s, sleep is sleep is sometimes secondary or tertiary in your needs.
So four of us bachelor officers rented a house. And
rented a house on a lake.
Right, yeah.
So what was the nearest community or town to where you rented the... Was it in Battle Creek where you rented the house, or was it...
No, it was at on Gull Lake, which is a lake between Kalamazoo and Battle Creek.
Okay.
And it's a fairly good sized lake. There's a lot of people are aware of it because there's a Kellogg Biological Laboratory right next to the lake. So a lot of Michigan people are aware of that lake, and it's... I think it was 16 miles around the lake, so a fairly concise lake.
Okay.
I don't know why I remember that.
So you alluded to this earlier, but let's ask it directly and see if there may be some more information. So when was it during your military experience that you decided that graduate school was going to be what you wanted to pursue?
I think it was about the summer of 65. I'd talked to Professor Bruin and at Madison here at the University of Wisconsin, and he encouraged me, invited me to come to graduate school. He had a research project that he was he had a student finishing up, and he was looking for another student to continue on the project. And so and he knew me personally, and like I said, had a class with him, and plus he was an advisor at a fraternity. Quite often, we always had to have chaperones at our fraternity. Quite often, he and his wife would be there and chat with him. So it was his encouragement for me to, and then it was an afterthought for me to apply at Michigan State.
Okay.
Since Michigan State was only about 40 or 50 miles away from Rio Station.
Right. And it sounds like you were sort of enjoying at least the extracurricular parts of being in that part of the world, so it might make sense to see if you could stay in that part of the world.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Right, right.
Was there any idea in your mind of continuing on in the military?
I gave it some thought, but then when I got off of active duty, I did continue in the Army Reserve, and I stayed beyond what I was required to stay. I'm not even sure what my requirement was. I think it was 2 years of active reserves, and that wasn't always enforced a lot, but I had some friends of mine who were in Army Reserve encouraged me to join them. And that was another fraternity connection.
Okay.
So that gentleman I knew, and he encouraged me to get involved in an Army Reserve unit. And I actually commuted up to Fond du Lac, Beaver Dam for a while, then Fond du Lac, and then for about a year and a half. And then we joined. We started the unit here in Madison. There's several of us were involved in a new Army Reserve unit in Madison.
Okay. And around what time period was this? Was this
It would have been in about 1967.
Okay. I
believe. It was about time Vietnam was becoming active, and people were being drafted, and mm-hmm. The lottery system came in place right. then number, and so forming a new unit here in Madison was not difficult to find young men, mm-hmm. and we didn't at that time women were not in our units at that time, the ones I was in, and so young men were looking for, if their number was low or they were sure to be drafted, they often, and when they joined us, they had to go on active duty for 6 weeks and then come back and spend, I think, like 5.5 years in reserves.
And this is something, at least in my mind, is in our recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, basically, it seemed to me anyway, for as an outsider, civilian, everybody was called up. But during Vietnam, one of the ways you could possibly avoid getting drafted was to join the reserves. Is that correct?
Right, reserves or National Guard.
Okay.
And they were some of the reserves obviously were there before Vietnam.
Right.
Because my brother, my older brother, was a member of the Guards, National Guard. So, and my younger brother was also a member of the National Guard.
Okay. But then just to make sure I get this clear, there was little or no chance with you being in the reserve unit that you were going to be called to Vietnam.
We didn't think so because we were what was called a basic combat training unit.
Okay.
And so if we were called on active duty, our unit, we would go to a place where, you know, we're all recruits. Our units are very small. The number of people we had in our units in reserves was very small. The people they did the training. Then if we went on active duty, then we would get the recruits to train, and our company would be a couple hundred people. Mm-hmm. Where we were, we only had about 25, 26 okay. people in our companies, but it would span. And when we went on summer camp training for 2 weeks, then we would go to one of those forts, like Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, mm-hmm. and we would work side by side with the regular Army and then take over some of the training.
Okay.
By the end of the 2 weeks, our people would be doing the training.
Okay.
So it wasn't, there were some reserve units called up, but not many. Not the way it is today with
okay.
Afghanistan.
Okay. So when you came back here to go to graduate school, where did you stay?
I rented an apartment with some of my fraternity brothers. So I'm always back connected again. And, mm-hmm. and one of the guys I was living with there was a roommate before that in my undergraduate days. And we still stayed connected.
And where was that in terms of a town or campus?
It was on just on Orchard Street, just off of Dayton.
Okay.
The apartment is still there yet, within a block of Union South.
Okay.
So...
And Union South at that point wasn't a current landmark, but it wasn't there at that time.
Correct. And okay. Went Library was not there either.
Okay.
We were like two blocks down from the hospital.
Okay.
Orchard Street comes in, the old hospital, the original hospital.
Right, right. The one on University Ave.
Yeah.
The building's still there, but it's not the hospital.
Correct.
Okay. Just maybe a couple of things to get us started in your time in graduate school, and then I think we'll wrap up for today. And the first is, when you started, was there a moment or an event or something that sort of let you know that graduate school was different than undergraduate school?
Yes. Well, I took half as many classes, which was one of the things. Like usually three classes. As an undergraduate, in order to get, for me to get through, I had to take average of 17 or 18 credits a semester. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with 181 or 184 credits as an undergraduate. That's five semesters plus the summer school I went, but I really had to push hard. But then graduate student, like three courses is the most that we took. So it was, so consequently, although you were I was a research assistant at the time, expected to do research, but usually what you did was you didn't do a lot of research during the school year, but then the summer is when you focused on it and more on it. You did some research, but the project I had was pretty much the most intense was during the summer, so I wasn't in summer school other than for research credits. I didn't take any classes during the summer. But.
Okay. And you mentioned that Professor Bruhn?
Bruhn.
And how do you spell that?
B-R-U-H-N.
H-N, okay. Professor Bruhn, at least in your mind, was recruiting you because he was looking for someone to help him with his work.
Right.
Maybe if you could, and this will sort of help, I think, to begin to close this interview, if you'd talk about what his work was that you then became involved in, or the work that you became involved in.
It was mechanical fruit harvesting or mechanical cherry harvesting. So I was probably about the fifth and final graduate student on the project because I did both my master's and PhD on that project. It had to do with harvesting cherries. Basically, we shook the tree or tree limb and the cherries would fall and we would collect them on a machine that had basically a canvas, mm-hmm. and it would roll into a conveyor, and so that was better than picking by hand. And so it was a shaker. One company in Wisconsin was building it for a while, and then even when I was a student already, but they just continued. My first year of my master's was more, I focused on somewhat on a couple of things. One was on quality of the cherry, was not only the harvesting, but also the quality of the cherries, more closely with food science, where we would cool the cherries immediately out in the field, or wait a while, and then we would actually pit the cherries and can them. We had a canning mm-hmm. operation up at Sturgeon Bay, wow. Wisconsin, and so we would evaluate the cherries at that time, individual cherries, we would test them, and then they were canned, and later in the winter I would evaluate the canned cherries as well, okay. with those various treatments. So it was just a matter of how quickly we hold them in water. You know, some we held for an hour, I think 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours before we would start pitting them. And we were looking at yield too in terms of how well they pitted. And then we would test them too. We would actually measure the force to remove a pit from the cherry, push the pit out. Mm-hmm. And we measure the force continually, and we could see kind of a history or graph of the force that was required to push that cherry out, mm-hmm. or push the pit out of the cherry.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Right. So and then we modified that, and we were just poking holes in the cherry, and the force that was exerted,
to be able to split the initial skin.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And how firm the cherry was. We were looking at how firm it was at the time, because if you're pushing out firm, the force would increase more rapidly than if you had a, not the right word, a soggy one, or one that would, mm-hmm. was mushy. Highly scientific terms, I
mean. Yes. I think that's all I want to ask today.
Okay.
But I want to ask you if there's anything, and again, we're talking about this time period of your early life, mm-hmm. Through the mid-60s, through that master's degree. Anything on your mind, any anecdotes or anything on your mind that you'd like to get off your mind and on the record about that time period?
It was always very enjoyable to go up to Sturgeon Bay during the summertime. It's obviously a resort area, but we would spend 3 or 4 weeks up there doing this research. And it was not only Professor Bruhn up there, there were some other professors. Like I said, we were working with food science, and there was a food science professor who is still around. In fact, I just saw him Tuesday as well, and he always reminds me if whether he made the right decision in passing me. And there was a couple other professors up there that I got to know. But this professor from food science was both on my master's and PhD committees.
What's the name of that?
Joel Von Elbe.
Von Elbe?
Yeah, V-O-N. E-L-B-E.
And is that, that's a space between the Von and the
right,
Elbe?
Yeah. Okay. He was chair of food science after that.
Okay.
So.
So I assume you say it was enjoyable to go to Sturgeon Bay. Did you have time to play while you were there as well as work?
A little bit. I always had to find different restaurants to eat at. You know, I was trying to different restaurants up there, and it was always interesting in terms of one of the things. I don't know if I'll get into it if you have time to get into it, but one of the things about being around and having a large family of 50 first cousins on my dad's side alone, I run into relatives. One night we were eating in a restaurant and the waitress was my cousin. And I didn't recognize her right away. So that's kind of the unusual thing. And then they did a video on mechanical cherry harvesting, and the young lady that was with the Wisconsin radio and so forth was dated a guy I was in the military service with. So it's always those kind of connections always come back to to, I don't know if you say haunt me, but I guess it's also a sign of being senior, old.
All right, Ron, I want to thank you for your time today. And okay. So this concludes the first interview with Ron Schuler. Thank